Hey everyone, William D. Parker here from Principal Matters, the School Leaders Podcast. With over 1.4 million downloads and a decade of content for school leaders, our resources are available for you at williamdparker.com. As we dive into 2024, I'm reminded of the craziness this time of the year brings. My wife affectionately dubs this time of year Maysember, and it's a whirlwind of activities and planning, so here are some quick survival tips. 1, maintain a sensible schedule. 2, accept what's out of your control. 3, prioritize your tasks. 4, lean on your team. 5, tackle one thing at a time. And 6, don't forget to celebrate your wins. If you want to hear more about how to stay sane this time of the year, go back to our archives to episode 14, and I'll put a link in the show notes. In other exciting news, Principal Matters is set to serve over 100 events this next school year. That's right, we are booking fast for professional development sessions, both in person and virtual, covering a range of leadership growth opportunities. And if you're interested, I would love to chat with you. Schedule a free 30-minute Zoom call when we can explore how to collaborate together. You can email me at will@williamdparker.com or visit williamdparker.com/services for more details. Well, this week, Jen Schwanke hosts a fantastic interview with Alyssa Gallagher discussing Alyssa's insights on coaching leaders and her new book, Embracing Messy Leadership. It's a conversation full of value. So thanks for tuning in and thanks for doing what matters. And let's get started. Principal Matters Podcast, episode 395.
Principal Matters Podcast. This is Jen Schwanke, and I am doing an exciting interview today for you. My friend Will Parker is not, he's taken the day off, probably making a huge difference in the world somewhere. But we are just recording today with Alyssa Gallagher, who is a colleague of mine through ASCD. She has published 2 books from ASCD, right, Alyssa, already?
Yes. Yes.
And have one more coming out, I believe, in May. Okay.
Correct.
So we snatched her up. We want to hear what she has to say. And what we'll do today is I will give you a quick intro from Alyssa, and then she and I are just going to talk. We're just going to share some of the things that we've been working on and learn a little bit more about Alyssa as an educator. So just to start, Alyssa co-leads BTS Spark in North America. And I believe that, Alyssa, you can tell us more about this, but you have helped school leaders across the US and Canada with leadership coaching and PD. You've worked for 20 years in leadership development in the K-12 world, teacher, principal, assistant superintendent, and you're based out of California. Is that correct, Alyssa?
That's correct. Okay. Yes.
All right. Well, why don't I stop talking and let's hear your voice, because that's why we're here today. Tell us, I gave the bare bones of your bio, but tell us about yourself as an educator and your journey and why you're here today.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I'd be happy to. So as you mentioned, I'm based just outside of Los Angeles. I'm in Santa Monica. And I would say my journey as an educator, I had a pretty traditional kind of K-12 journey. I was a classroom teacher, right? And aspired to have bigger impact, found myself in administration, you know, kind of that typical story. I was an assistant principal, a principal, loved, I think being a principal was probably one of my favorite jobs in the world, hardest job in the world, but I just loved it. I was a K-6 elementary principal, found myself in the district office, and all of my career, actually all 20 years in K-12 were in California. So I just moved up and down the coast, Southern California, Northern California. But really, it was when I was working in Los Altos, the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, you know, Silicon Valley, a lot of innovation. I got really interested in sort of pushing the envelope in schools and really thinking, you know, how can we reimagine schools and really support educators in that process, right? Because we know it's such a big system to move. And so that was when I started working with ASCD, and I co-authored 2 books around design thinking. And really using design thinking as the methodology to shift and reimagine schools. And then life happened and we relocated and I found myself in LA and did a little bit of a pivot. I was doing some writing, found myself in sort of that professional development role, really teaching teachers, right? I think the through line in my entire career has been teaching. It's just who I've taught has changed. And then I had a really unique experience. I sort of hit pause in education, and I worked with a well-known author, Liz Wiseman, a leadership author. She has authored business books and education books around multipliers and really how do you leverage the best of people. So I spent a few years working for her and got really interested in, you know, how do we change mindsets and how do we support adults to grow and learn in a way that's more meaningful and contextual. And so I was enjoying that work. And then COVID hit and I thought, I love this. And I want to get back to working with educators, you know, full-time education leaders. I just feel like that's where my heart is. And so I was really happy when I found the work I'm doing now. I work for BTS Spark, and we're a global not-for-profit group who focuses on leadership development, really from school principal and on up through the superintendency, through coaching, through one-on-one support. So really, what I'm most excited about in the work I'm doing now is I feel like I get to practice what I was preaching for so long, right? Personalized learning for kids, individualizing the experience, meeting people where they are. But now I get to do that with leaders across the space.
So you've made quite a name for yourself. Your work has been featured on CNN, Forbes, Wired, The Economist, 60 Minutes. So you've had an impact. And I think it's fascinating that if I heard you correctly, you dipped your toe outside of the education world and then kind of came back to the world of teaching and learning. And now I'm not, I don't say this to insult you or myself, but tell us what you mean for our listeners. Tell us what you mean when you say design thinking. If I'm a principal and I'm, let's say, in an area where that has not yet become a conversation, what do we mean by design thinking?
Yeah, Jen, thanks. That's such a great, I know I always try not to speak in acronyms or jargon, right? So design thinking, it's a problem solving process. And there's a lot of them. There's breakthrough thinking. I mean, it's a process to essentially tackle a problem. What differentiates design thinking from perhaps other problem solving practices is that it's grounded so much more in empathy. And it really lives and exists in this place of empathy. So instead of, if you and I wanted to tackle a problem in education, you know, there's lots of problems we could tackle. Instead of just saying, well, what do Alyssa and Jen think? And what are our ideas to solve it? We would take whatever problem it is and we would say, well, what's the end user experience? And oftentimes it's in schools, it's let's ground ourselves in the experience of students. Right? Like, let's really like, how are they experiencing it from everything? If it's, we're trying to figure out how to get, you know, more meaningful report cards. Okay. Well, what does that mean for a student? So it's just really grounding yourself in the empathy piece and then solving from there. So always recognizing that we're not solving the problem for ourselves. We're always designing for somebody else. And I would say the other thing that differentiates it is it's a lot of ideation and sort of quick cycle. So let's not put a committee together and spend a year discussing a strategy. Let's get together for a month and say, what's our quick idea that we need to go test? So it's a constant iteration process. So I think those are the two things that really set design thinking apart from other processes that we can use to solve problems.
The reason I like it and the reason I like your explanation and, by the way, your energy about it is so many times principals, and you know, I was one for 17 years, so many times we're in a place where we got what works, it's fine, leave me alone, don't point out the problems or the inefficiencies, I got this, right? But with a design thinking mindset, it kind of releases that defensiveness. And so you can just think and you can design and you can see where it goes and you can get input. And so it's not about being right or wrong. It's about being on the journey and the process toward change. And change doesn't necessarily mean you abandon what you know and love. It right. means incorporate somehow.
Yeah, I love that. And it's playful. There's a playfulness to it.
Exactly. We say that to kids all the time. We say, well, design something, build something, create something. But as adults, we forget that. Yeah. So tell us about your book. You've got one coming out in May. Tell us about that and how is that going to resonate with our listeners? I always, you know, like you just said, we try to think of students. I always try to think of our listeners. We have a listener right now who's driving to work.
Okay.
They're ready for a day. How is this book going to be one that might make their day a little better?
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Jen. So the book that will be released by ASCD in May, the title is Embracing Messy Leadership. And then the subtitle, there's always a long subtitle, right? Let's see if I can even memorize it. How the experience of 20,000 educators can transform you and your school. But really, you know, the essence that you need to know is messy leadership, right? And I co-authored this book with my global director, Rosie Connor in Australia. And we coined messy. One, it is an acronym and every letter stands for a mindset shift that we want to help leaders make, but really because it also sort of embraces what I believe is the nature of being a school leader, right? It's messy. It's not this linear process. It's you're solving problems and fighting fires and in all of that are supposed to set a vision and lead and right be all of these things. And so I love this just notion that leadership is messy and it's non-perfect and it's non-linear. But why this book is important and what I believe really sets it apart. Let me actually backtrack just a minute and say, you know, when I've now been with BTS Spark for 3 years and about a year into my role, I sort of had this aha. I had this insight that as a global group, we've coached over 20,000 school and district leaders, right? And now coaching is a very confidential space. It's outside of the district. We use professional leadership coaches. It's confidential. It's non-judgmental. It's leaders are bringing their real work problems into their sessions with their coach. And on the back end, we have anonymous because all the conversations are confidential and anonymous, but we have anonymous data to say, hey, these are the shifts that 20,000 leaders want to make. And these are their struggles. And so it was an interesting research project to say, you know, how do we distill that down? And so what I think makes our book unique and different even than the previous books that I've had the privilege of co-authoring is that the goal is not just to bring in my voice or my opinions on leadership. We're bringing in the voices of 20,000 school leaders. And so what I hope is that for the average principal, director, superintendent that's reading this book, they actually see themselves in there because right. I think leadership is the school principalship especially, it's such a lonely job. And at times, you know, we can feel, am I the only one that's having this problem? And so what we've done in the book is we've outlined the top challenges that leaders are experiencing. And then we've shared like their stories, some quotes and some, hey, if you're experiencing this, here's some tools to really help you.
So I'm glad you outlined the importance of confidentiality and safety in coaching conversations, because as we know, it just doesn't work if you don't have that foundation. Right. I also think it creates a space where people can be messy. I love the use of that word because I think principals all across the world spend a lot of time thinking, why do I feel like such a mess? And it's because the environment you are hired to oversee is a mess. And that isn't a bad word. Messy isn't a bad word. It's a descriptive word. And what I like about it is it captures both the work and the feelings behind the work. And I know it takes a while for me to really be honest and open about my struggles with a coach. I want to be able to say things like, oh my gosh, this is hard. I hate it. How am I going to do this the rest of my life? And not mean it. Right? Right. I need a place to be able to be allowed to be messy.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
So tell us about when you were a principal, when you were a teacher, when you were an assistant superintendent, and you were in the dirt of the work. What were some challenges you faced and how do you see principals grappling with some of those challenges today?
Yeah. So, you know, I think some of the challenges that I experienced are probably challenges that people still are experiencing. And I also am aware that I have now been out of a traditional, you know, K-12 leadership position for 8 years. And I know the landscape has changed a lot, right? With COVID and just safety concerns and, I mean, critical race theory and AI, like these weren't topics that I was having to grapple with. And so I certainly don't want to dismiss any of those. The things that I struggled with, I think are core to what a lot of leaders struggled with, you know, some of them being Hey, I'm a young leader. I remember being a principal and walking into a very accomplished school, very senior staff, with them looking at me like, what do you have to say to us about the school? You know, we've been here, we've been through three principals in 10 years and, you know, we've outlasted them, right? And so I think that raises all sorts of confidence issues in leaders and imposter syndrome. I think, you know, what we know from our research is the number one challenge that leaders bring into coaching is courage to have the difficult conversations they need to have. And what's fascinating to me about that is that's across all levels, right? It doesn't matter if you're a principal or a superintendent. It didn't matter in our research if you were working in Canada or Australia or the US. That is the number one concern that leaders are bringing into coaching.
Let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. Everyone talks about the power of data-driven instruction, but how do you actually get the right insights and know the best next steps? The secret is IXL. IXL helps you easily assess performance and determines the best path forward for each student. Whether you need data for benchmarking or intervention planning, IXL can do it all. And IXL doesn't stop at assessments. It also provides you with everything else your school needs, from a standards-aligned K-12 curriculum to actionable analytics. IXL's online learning and teaching platform is research proven to improve student outcomes and is used by 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts. If you also want to start driving real progress, get started today at IXL.com/PM.
So courage to have difficult conversations. The second one I can kind of share, would you be interested in like, what are the top few?
Please, go ahead, but let's stop at courage. Okay. I think that's, courage is such an interesting word, right? It implies you're courageous enough to climb this really big steep mountain, or you're courageous enough to invest your money in a high risk something or other. Courage, it can take such a huge amount of courage to look at someone that you know, that you trust, that you work with, that you've worked with for a lot of years, and say, hey, I need you to get better. Or, hey, we can't do that anymore. And it's so, you don't think of that as needing courage, but it really does. I worked with a group in Canada, actually, a group of principals, and they said, we struggle to tell a teacher, hey, here's how I want you to improve. And it was a light bulb moment for them, Alyssa, when I said, all you have to do is say the first sentence. The first sentence is the hardest. And you say, hey, I have to have a difficult conversation. Then you're too far in to get out, right? You're in, because you can't be like, actually, I'm a little worried about this, so we'll pick it up tomorrow. You can't, you're in. So I think that I'm glad you said courage, that that's what it takes often to do the really hard things. And it's not like you're running a marathon, not that kind of courage. It's an internal courage and confidence. So I'm glad you did that. Now that I got us off track a little bit, let's get back on track.
No, let's stay off track just for a little bit on that courage. The other thing that, so yes, it's relationship courage,
right?
It's because we as education leaders, and I'm going to lump us all together, we care about our people.
Right.
We know our people are overworked and we are like worried about either damaging the relationship or putting more on other people. And so it's scary. We don't want to do that. The other place that I see courage around difficult conversations is a lot of times, especially at the principal level, new principals will come in and, you know, they want to get to know their community. So they take a year getting to know people. Then year two, they've identified some problems. Then year three, it's really hard now. How do you tackle problems that you've let go for a few years? So that's another type of courage around difficult conversations, right? And so, yeah, it's people, it's relational courage.
It is. And it's about trust and about faith and about people talking to someone who are devoted to their work. And going deep with them, right? And none of us like criticized, but we do like coaching, we do like feedback. And it just takes a deep level of knowledge and trust and courage, I think, to get there. So we could do it, clearly, you and I could do an entire podcast on the word, but let's shift back. Tell us a little bit.
I think it's really fascinating. You know, we went into this research project thinking that there might be differences. There might be differences at level of leadership. There might be regional differences. by and large, there wasn't anything statistically significant. And the top five themes and challenges that leaders are bringing in, again, I want to put this in context. This is not saying these are the top problems that leaders are saying. These are the top themes that their coaches have distilled. Like, what's the mindset underpinning why they're not solving whatever problem, right? So courage, you need courage to solve a lot of problems, but the mindset is like building that courage to do it. And as you said, having that first sentence. The second theme, really interesting, is around empowering others, delegating other people, empowering them to fix their own problems, not right. running around and fighting everybody's fires and fixing everybody's problems, right? And I know that really resonates with me as a leader.
Absolutely. How many new leaders measure themselves on whether they solved everybody else's problems? Whereas that's not it at all. The way to lead through that is, how can I help you solve this problem? That's what it is.
Yeah. Number three is around engaging others and influencing others to change their practice, right? When we lead people. And so we need those relational skills. That's the third one. The fourth one was actually a surprise to me. The fourth one is confidence. Mm-hmm. Just having the confidence in whatever situation and context you find yourself in, whether that be, you know, a challenging school board or a seasoned teacher or an angry parent, but really having the confidence to show up and know, you know, like owning that confidence. And then the fifth one, and we actually identified 10 in the book, but I'm not going to go into all 10. The fifth one is the need to slow down and the need to shift from a task orientation, right? I've got so much on my to-do list, to a people orientation. I think that one's really interesting as well. Powerful.
And I would actually combine those two in a lot of contexts, because confidence is built when you realize, when you give yourself permission to slow down and be more deliberate in your decision-making. I was always, in the beginning, I was the one with a fire extinguisher and I was going to put out fires, and I was running around, like, you know, just making more of a mess, so to speak. And when I gave myself permission to say, hey, you don't need to solve this today. You might not need to solve it tomorrow. You might not need to solve it ever. And I gave myself that permission to press pause. I became more confident as a leader. It's so ironic, but it makes sense. Like, slow down. Give yourself time to think. Give your people time to think. Figure out, I'm going to tie back to your other themes. Figure out where you can delegate, where you can empower someone else. Figure out if this is a problem you do need to help with at all. I think these are all tied together. And I actually don't want you to stop. I want you to tell us some more themes.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. So our goal in writing this book and with these themes, like why it's important is, our goal, number one, is we want leaders to see, like, you're not alone. Like, we probably aren't talking about, when I would show up at my administrative council meetings with the other principals, I wasn't talking to the other principals about my lack of confidence in situations, right? Because I'm supposed to project that I have this confidence. And so part of why we unearth these themes is, one, we want leaders to see that they're not alone. Like, this is a common challenge, a common theme. And so what we hope is that in reading Messy Leadership, a couple of things, and then we can jump to the other things, is that we want leaders, one, to see themselves, to see they're not alone. We also wrote it from the perspective of, there's no expectation, because it's a messy book. It wouldn't make sense to read the book from page one mm-hmm. to the end. So we very much authored it from the lens of your experience, Jen, as a leader. We might have similarities, but it may be very different than what I'm experiencing as a leader. And so our hope is that it will be sort of a practical pickup. I don't know if you were the era of when I was in third grade, it was choose your own adventure books, yes. Right? What do you want to have happen? Turn to page so-and-so. Like, that's sort of the intent. So every one of the messy letters in the acronym stands for a mindset shift. And each one is sort of like, hey, you might be leading this way, and that's great. But if you can shift your mindset here, it's an aspirational model. And here are some tools and some ways that you can increase your impact, right? Because that's really what it's about, is increasing our ability to have an impact.
Well, and I'm imagining a principal somewhere who's like, who feels they're at a crisis point, and crisis is a very big word. I should probably find one that isn't so big, but you're like, what do I need? My mindset isn't working here. And they go to their bookshelf and they pull down your messy leadership book and they flip to where they can find some guidance and a little bit more reassurance, perhaps, that they can do this. You know,
yes, I love that word of reassurance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reassurance, guidance, and also some tools of, you know, that maybe they can use with their team. I know that was always something that I appreciated when I was grappling with something like, is there an easy way for me to think about this, a frame, a process that I can then share with my instructional team, or I can share with my leadership team, and we can have a conversation about it.
Exactly. Okay. So tell me about a couple more themes. I think we were at slow down.
Okay. So we have slowing down. We have, and I'm just looking for my notes here. We talked about imposter syndrome. We talked about slowing down. Boundaries.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that one of our, I would say going in, one of our hypotheses, especially because now we're doing this research, we did the research from looking at coaching notes from 2018 to 2022. So we all know what happened in that span, and in that span was COVID. And so one of our hypotheses going into this research was that we thought that it was going to be a much bigger focus on well-being, right? Sort of personal well-being. Well-being came up a little bit, but it didn't come up in like the, I need to take care of myself better way. It came up in, I need to learn how to set boundaries. Uh-huh. Right. I need to not, and I don't know, Jen, if that's something, you know, that you struggle with as a leader, you know, clearly you're a successful leader.
Well, the mindset shift for me was, cause you'll hear boundaries. And to me, that's always a synonym to barrier. And I struggled with that. And then it occurred to me one day, or someone said this to me, probably, boundaries are teaching others how you want to be treated. And I thought, ha, I can get behind that. So it's not about from 1 to 3, I'm closing my door and catching up on email. That's a boundary, but it's probably not a healthy or an inclusive one. But boundaries as in, I need people to know that there's going to be times I'm going to have to pull out and check my email. That's a little different. It's teaching others what you need.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's keep going on some of the themes. Yeah. The next theme was on not procrastinating, getting things done, managing time. Right? Just like the nitty gritty of I'm juggling 100 balls. How do I know which ones are glass and which ones will bounce if I drop them? You know, which ones are essential that I like. So really understanding how to prioritize and use time and not be in that reactive mode all the time, but taking charge of time.
Absolutely. Principals who have a high number of discipline infractions in their schools, a lot of referrals to the office, that can really muck it up because the priority might be call this child's parents, but that's not the work that they need to be doing to build capacity with teachers so that less kids get sent to the office, right? So sometimes principals get caught in that, you know, procrastinating the things that will make the immediate priorities less immediate. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. It's sort of, it's the symptoms versus like the root of the problem. Right. But if we're so busy and so overwhelmed treating the symptoms, we might not have time to get to like the core problem.
Correct. Okay. So we have procrastinate and what other?
Okay. Two more themes. One is seeing the bigger picture. This kind of goes with slowing down, but this one was very much around, hey, I'm so busy doing all of the things that I'm not taking the time I need to think strategically as a leader, to really step back and analyze how I'm spending my time and where I could have the biggest impact. And so it was more of a strategic focus, like leaders coming in saying, I'm wanting to lead this school or this district because I have these ideas and but I'm not using them. Exactly. You know, I'm not creating the space to do that.
Right. And that ties back to being reactive. If you're being reactive and not proactive in how you want to lead, that's going to come back and get you if you don't see that bigger picture.
Yeah. And then the last theme I'll share was really around how do I create shared purpose, you know, and how do I co-create and collaborate with my staff around shared purpose and shared vision. And we had one really impactful kind of mindset shift from a leader who, you know, shared how hard she was working and then basically summarized it with that John Maxwell quote, you know, if I'm leading and nobody's following, am I just out taking a walk kind of thing? And like, oh, that feels so harsh, right? But well-intentioned, I think we can find ourselves as leaders doing all of the work, setting the vision, setting the sort of the pace and what we're going to accomplish. And then is anybody really with us? And so want to kind of take a step back and do more of this co-creation. And like, how do we do that?
Right. And, you know, I think that is such a sign of mature leadership when you can get to the point where you actually do look over your shoulder and see who's following. And you know, you look for trends. You don't look for one-offs. You look for situations in which you have rolled out something or you have asked for input or you have made a decision and everybody's mad about it. That doesn't necessarily make you wrong, but it maybe makes you someone who's not leading the conversation. You've made an announcement. Now everybody gets in line and it doesn't work that way. Unfortunately. Okay. So I know we're running out of time. I feel like you and I could talk forever, but tell me a little bit more about how you, just one more question, and then I'll have you tell our listeners where they can find you. How do you encourage leaders when you work with them to balance the intensity and the importance of the work with joy and happiness and fulfillment? How can we get there so that it's not a job we have to go to, but work we get to do?
Yeah. Wow. We could talk for an hour on just that question, Jen, couldn't we?
Right.
Yeah, I think that goes to kind of the core of the work that we're trying to do and support educators in, which is really around mindset shifts. Right. And so many times as leaders, we get caught up in leadership behaviors. Like, if we shift our behavior, we could have better results or better impact. But what we know is that behavior is actually dictated by our thoughts and feelings. And so we try to take a step back and get leaders to really reconnect to their thoughts and feelings, their beliefs on any given topic. And I think that really equates to your question around joy and balancing our workload. And, you know, is that all the educators that I've ever met, we got into this profession because we care, because we want to have a positive impact. So I think it's, you know, reconnecting to our why and why we're doing this work and finding ways to really ground ourselves into that and to remind ourselves it's a choice. We're choosing this profession, right? And so I think there's some subtle mindset shifts there that we use to really help educators reconnect to their why. And often reconnecting to our why helps us find that place of joy and that place of, you know, serving and doing the work that we love.
I was doing some coaching with a principal in, actually he lives in Nebraska and he's like, he was a new principal and he's like, I hate it. I'm out. And I said, okay, tell me about your day. And do you know, in his day that he described to me, there wasn't one time where he just had a chill moment with the student. I said, you know what you need to do? You need to go where the kids are. Yeah. Make yourself a half an hour, go out, lunch, you know, a sporting event, whatever, and don't just watch, dig in, get to know. And you know what? He's still in the job. He's like, okay, I had forgotten. I was so busy, you know, approving absences, planning PD, doing teacher observations, dealing with discipline, parents, all that. He's like, I wasn't doing the fun stuff. And I think that's exactly what you said. You got to get back to where the fulfillment and joy is. And then it gives a reason why you're doing all the other stuff.
Such a great strategy, Jen. I love it.
Okay. So tell our listeners how they can find you. I know your book's coming out in May, but tell us, like, if they need to get a hold of you through BTS Spark, how does that work?
Yeah. So simplest way, probably easiest to remember is btsspark.org. We'll take you to our website. You can find me there, Alyssa Gallagher at btsspark.org. I'm also on LinkedIn. Search up BTS Spark on LinkedIn. We're always sharing free resources and webinars. And really our goal is to have impact. And so we're really looking to touch more and more educators and leaders, because we know that great leaders mean good schools. And, you know, if we can influence the heart and mind and support leaders and really my goals to support educators from not leaving the profession and to stay, that it has a positive ripple effect all the way through our communities. So ETSSpark.org.
Okay. And if you want to get your hands on that book, ASCD, Amazon and Barnes & Noble usually have a pre-order, or you can just order it right there. And you can find Alyssa's bio on the ASCD website as well. So, well, Alyssa, I have to say your energy and your enthusiasm and the ways that you're supporting leaders, keeping that bigger picture in mind, building their confidence, helping them set healthy boundaries, avoiding procrastination. I just summarized a few, but that work I think is really getting to the essence of what school leaders need right now. So on behalf of all of our listeners, I thank you for that work. I wish you the very, very best of luck with your book too.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks. It's been fun chatting with you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do another round too after your book is out, and we'll talk about some of the things that are resonating with your readers. So best wishes. It is worth noting, by the way, that it is a nice, happy, healthy mid-morning for me, but Alyssa got up at 0:30 out in California to record this. And just so you know, I can see her. She looks like she's been up for hours. So love your energy, love your enthusiasm, and we will talk soon. Best of luck, Alyssa.
Thanks, Jen.
Find free resources like this one at williamdparker.com. Subscribe for our free weekly newsletter, which contains bonus material, and also check out the links for Grow Academies, Masterminds, Executive Coaching, and Keynote Presentations for my books, as well as from Principal Matters Associates. You can find out more under our speakers tab at williamdparker.com. Thank you for learning together, and thank you for doing what matters.